Downloads of this show are available on Podomatic.com and the Podomatic mobile app.
I am Velocity Child, and every Friday at the stroke of midnight, ride the broomstick with fallen woman, stirring up the cauldron at Radio Free Brooklyn.
Welcome home, everyone. Welcome home, all of you dear brave souls. Las almas valientes is how we say it in Spanish. Las almas valientes, the valiant souls. Welcome home, all you members of the tribe of the Sacred Heart, many of us Scar Clan. Welcome to the fireside here of the Holy Mother, La Mujer Grande, as we sometimes call her. In Spanish, that means the Great Woman. She's here with us. She's not someone that you exactly summon. She's not someone that you call, in a sense. She's always with us, and we remember her. We remember that she's with us. That's more precise, that we remember that she's with us, always. And it is this great woman who carries the child of love, capital L-O-V-E, into the world. And we're in a time, as you know, when the child of love is often assaulted, ridiculed, called down every day. And this is why I say to you that when people make a list of all the endangered species of the world, that we should put at the very top, number one, that the soul of love is the most endangered species of all. And yet we, as Mary, Marias, Miriam's warriors, we are the ones who protect the enormous magnitude of the divine soul of love. One of the most ancient paintings of Maria, Blessed Mother, is on a wall and is painted somewhat crudely, but not for the time it was painted in. And it is one of the earthiest pictures of Maria that we have. She's shown with a little baby in her arms. And above her is a tree that is naked of its leaves, but has many branches. And she is, as you often do not see her in many of the popularized versions and more richly painted versions of Blessed Mother. Her breasts are exposed, and she is nursing the God of love in her arms, held so tenderly with her hand over the little naked baby's buttocks and her other hand behind his head supporting. And she is looking down at her child in that gaze, you know, the gaze between the mother and the child. And the baby, no matter how fed, when they're very young, they gaze into the mother's eyes and the mother gazes into their eyes. And we believe psychologically that this is one of the most important transmissions that's made between the mother and now the one who is born into the world, who is no longer protected in the hiding place inside the body, but is now out into the wide world. This gaze of love and reception, of need and fulfillment, flows back and forth between the mother and the child of love. And that's what this painting is about. Now, overhead, even farther in this painting, it's in a catacomb, meaning it's underground, it's painted on a rock wall. It says, beautiful and as original as the paintings of the animals and the caves in France at Lascaux. It is so beautiful. Its colors are limited because they're painted with the pigments that are found in the ground, right there. So ochre, what we call Indian red in watercolor painting today. Dark gris, G-R-I-S, dark gray, soft gray, to the green side. And the flesh tone is dark. It is a sienna color and beautiful. And so also on the wall high above is a star, a beautiful star, saying that this child of love, this God of love, is born under a happening in the heavens that announced that no more will humanity suffer in a certain way without knowledge of immaculate love, that this woman, la mujer grande, the great woman, has brought through her body the hiding place inside, so that love is safe and can grow and develop. That this woman has brought to the world at this time a visible, palpable, living being who will demonstrate, as the mother does in her own way, the tenets of love on earth inspired by that which is greater than earth alone. So I'll have this ancient idea of Blessed Mother, and my bet is that most of you have experienced, when you were young, Blessed Mother nearby. You may not have named her that way or understood her that way, but as she is everywhere where there are acts of compassion, she is visible in every act of kindness. She is visible in anything that nurses, nourishes, nurtures others, just like the ancient Madonna in the catacombs, shown on the wall with her full breasts of milk, nourishing the little god of love. That's us also, in a human form. We too do the same. And when we were little children, we were part of this mystery. It's only as most of us become older that we move away from what is not seen with the eyes alone, not heard with the ears alone. When I was a little girl, I remember we were going to something called a lake. That's what the grown-ups called it, except because there were immigrants and refugees. They said, "We're going to a lake. We're going to lake." And so we all piled into this old, old car. Someone had a car, and, you know, the car back then was a little bit like a cup of sugar in the sense that you went and borrowed other people's cars all the time so that you could go someplace that wasn't within walking distance. And the lake was about 20 minutes away from where we live. So a little bit too long to walk to, especially in the cold. And it was a winter time, but somebody, you know, has said, this is the time that we are going to go and try out this new car for a drive, this actually used, crumbling, rusty-fendered car that someone said that they had won in a poker game with other immigrants in some smoky hallway somewhere. And so I was wearing these scratchy clothes. You know, you remember this when you were little, that people would put clothing on you that you just wanted to tear it off because it didn't feel right. It felt too tight or too scratchy, itchy, or too long or too short, or it made you too cold or it made you too hot or whatever. Well, it was sort of like that when we were little because we had a lot of hand-me-down clothes. And so you just say, well, I have to be in prison. As long as I'm wearing my clothes, I'm in a little prison. And then you just made your adaptations to it. So I had on a little dress. You know, they hang down to your ankles. And the little bit too tight in the neck. You know how you feel it slightly choked by a dress? And also the big, you know, elastic bands that, you know, you have leggings that are made of wool, and the elastic bands go under your galoshes, under your boots, to hold your leggings down. And so I had a great big brown coat that was all swirled around, and I used to try to turn in it, you know, kind of dancing, and people would say, stop that, stop that, sit down, be quiet. So a little hat, you know, it's a had elastic around the end of it, and it would leave a little pie crust, you know, shape indented in my skin on the forehead because it was a little bit too tight. And everyone else was dressed just like me, only bigger, more padded, more furry, more big coats, more everything. So we all piled into this car and we are stuffed in there, you know, like flying geese stuffed into a very small cage with windows. And we were going to drive fast so our uncle could show off this new used car with all the four mismatched tires. And we could think that for the moment anyway, we were, as you probably remember in your own family, we were like kings and queens of the moment because we were doing like the rich people did, like we saw them fly by in their beautiful sculptured cars. So we veered down the road to the Great Lake that was, I found, called Michigan. Great Mother Lake, Michigan. A huge inland ocean. It's not far from the little village of 600 people where I lived. At the lake, it was even more icy cold there because the wind was coming off the wide open lake with nothing to occlude it. And there was this sort of bright sun, except it won't go behind the cloud, you know, the snow clouds. And so all of a sudden everything would be kind of dim and dingy and gray. And so at the end of the bluff was a staircase that went down many landings worth, all the way down to the beach. It was made of concrete and had iron rails for handrails on it that surely somebody who was an ironmonger had made out of scrap metal, because the pieces would leave off on the handholds and there would be nothing for 3 or 4 feet, and then all of a sudden there would be the handrail again. So not enough scrap to go around, in other words. And so down below that, and far off in the distance, is a tall red lighthouse that had snow on its roof and was giving out its mournful sound. Because even though the waters were filled with broken ice, still, there would be tankers and other ships that would need to know that here there was a rock cliff of bluffs, and in the sun being covered over by the snow clouds, and then the fog coming in soon, that they should not run aground. So I slipped away from my elders. They were all busy drinking something golden-looking in little tiny glasses, and they were making that sound, you know, and then they fill their little glasses with the golden liquid and they throw it back again and they go, ah! And their noses were all red and their cheeks were all red. And I slipped away and I made my way down the staircase, you know, 1 foot on a step and then the other foot on the same step. And then down 1 step with 1 foot, holding onto the handrail, and then another step. And then turning around and using, you know, your hands on the step and then stepping down backward in the places where there was no handrail. And finally, I got all the way down to the bottom. I had never seen water before in my entire life. Big water. It was incredible. And not only that, it was rushing toward me. It was welcoming me. It was saying, It was saying, hello. It was saying, look, here I am. Come play with me. And so in my two big galoshes, on my two big coat, I went running toward the water. And the strength of lace that was in those waves that were breaking apart on the shore, moving parts lost off of ships, and tree trunks were floating in and out and bringing all these big objects into shore and slamming them down on the shore and then gently, gently taking them out again. And that came from grandmothers who made lace, you know, with, it seemed like, hundreds of bobbins at a time. And I thought, you know, go out into the lake where I imagine maybe there would be some old women there, like watery old women. They're making all this red and yellow lace in the deep, and the red being now from the reflection of the lighthouse far away into the water from the waning sun. So with full open heart, I ran right into the lake. Right into the lake, and my galoshes immediately filled up with the coldest, coldest water. And I took a breath. I kind of took my breath from me, and I could feel some spirit in the water wanting to take my legs out from under me. And then that's when I first saw her, the lady in the water, coming toward me. The sky behind her was red with this pale sunset, and a sudden Holy Spirit white bird flying through the air over her head, a sliver of moon already in the yellow clouded sky at the same time, surrounded by yellow and red and gray and pale and cloud and fog all at once. And the lady wore a beautiful red gown and mantle with many golden spangles, and on her head was a beautiful golden crown. And I thought I was seeing my own relative. Something about her was so familiar. So much love burst out of my heart, and I felt like my little heart had missed her so much for an eternity. And I was so glad to see her. I started to try to run faster toward her, deeper into the water. But she was calling to me, No, don't run. Don't run toward me. I came to run after you. Turn around. It was hard to turn. It was hard to walk in the water. It was now up to my waist. And I could feel that spirit still under the water now, wanting to take my hips, wanting to take all of me outward toward the lady. But I realized she came to play a game with me. I understood now. And I turned some more and put my hands into the cold water. And water came through my mittens, and I pulled my coat to turn, because it was all trailing behind me. And I pulled my coat so I could turn facing the shore. And the next wave crashed into my back and pushed me a little bit toward the shore. And then I ran in the water until it got shallower and shallower. I ran all heavy booted, and I fell palms down in the water that seemed to have no bottom. But somehow the water, even though straight up my nose and in my ears, still the water somehow supported me. And I ran laughing and choking and coughing and laughing, and she was playing a game with me. She ran after me. She ran after me all bent over with her hands fluffing out behind my back, and the way you would shoo a duckling or a gosling. And I ran more laughing, colder now, wobbling more and more. I fell down finally on the wet sand, and I laughed as a crazy drunk, and I scrabbled my way upright again, and the lady ran behind me, chasing me higher up the wet sandy mounds and away from the big water to the long concrete stairs. And I fell over and got up and fell over. And I wasn't laughing. I was so cold, so cold. And I heard a commotion, and I looked upward, and I saw my relatives galloping full speed down the stairs sideways, men in mustache, women in pocketbooks swinging wildly. I vaguely heard them earlier, seeming to bellow across the divide, "No, no," to someone, but I don't know who. But now their voices, full, right next to me. They were somehow shouting and cooing to me at the same time. "Yes, yeah. Come to us. Run to us. Yes, that's right. Come to us. Little Kleiner, come to us. Come to us." And I remember being taken off my feet. Someone grabbed me by the coat sleeve, an arm so hard it left a hurting black purple on my skin. And then someone hit me hard for trying to run into the water, they said. And I was cold as ice. I was shivering and chattering and crying now. And I was carried up the stairs like a weeping cord of wood under someone's arms, and holding my arms out behind them toward Our Lady. I saw her. The great Michigan Mother Lake, I saw her. I saw her. I was blinded by tears, but opening and closing my fingers stretched out. "Lady, lady, lady," I said. And for punishment, they put me in jail, setting me down hard in the dark back seat of the car by myself. I tried to roll down the heavy window to tell them about the lady, the beautiful lady in the water, the beautiful lady who came to me. But there was no lady. That's what they said. No lady. No lady. No lady in red. No lady with golden crown. No lady. Only the red lighthouse. Always been there. Lighthouse. Only. And that lighthouse had a widow's walk on the top of it. All the way around, so it, they said, only looked like a crown. No crown, no lady in red. So, I stopped trying to tell them. I'd be punished worse if I told any more of what they called lies. But in a child's heart, you know, that sees true and knows what it sees and will dive underground with what it sees that is precious and good, even if the grown-ups disapprove. I'd seen the lady. I had seen her. And more so, she had seen me. My sense about you, dear souls, las almas valientes, was that she's seen you too. My bet is that you've seen her also. And yet, as you know, there are people and ideas. There are trends and fashions. Sometimes there are even religions, spiritual endeavors, philosophies that try to erase what we know to be true, what we experience firsthand, cheek to cheek. And so, since time out of mind, dark forces rise up, spewing black sand everywhere, trying to douse the light of the world, trying to destroy the sons and daughters of the light. Yes, the soul and all that it sees is on the endangered species list, and yet we are Mary's warriors. We are the ones who protect the enormous force of the divine soul of love. Long ago in Mexico, when Moctezuma, who was the chief Cauque, was the leader, the emperor of all the tribes of Mexico. There were not just one tribe, many, many. He heard by messenger that people, strange people, people who had never been seen before, people who were so pale like the moon, were coming with weapons from the east, that they had come in big ships, not like the small coracles that were used to ply the waters around what now is Mexico City, which was an island, and that they were bent on something, some kind of destruction. And yet, in those times, amongst most of the tribal people, even on the very most high, those who had gone to war with other tribal people, who had captured other people, who had enslaved other people, even then, people were often hospitable, at least initially, to the stranger. And so Moctezuma ordered all of his people to lay out the best of everything, the best of food, the best of gold ornaments, the best of the dancers, the drummers, the best of the table linens, the best of feathered headdresses, the best of everything that could ever be, as gifts for these ones who were the color of the moon. But two, because he was a strategist, he was not a naive person, he decided that they probably meant no good, and he would find out for sure. And how he would find out was he would summon all the dreamers that lived in all the villages and all the empires that he had conquered, and he would summon them to Tenochtitlan, the middle of the empire where he lived, and he would ask them to tell him the dreams that they have had about the future. In those times, people and villagers esteemed dreamers, people who dreamt not just for themselves, but for the entire tribe, for the entire group, and sometimes for the entire world unknown beyond the tribe itself. And these were esteemed people. Today, we will call them mystics. Today, we will call them healers. Today, we will call them curanderos and curanderas. Today, we will call them people who see inwardly and outwardly, people who hear inwardly and outwardly, people who sense inwardly and outwardly. And in curanderismo, we will call them sueñadores, the people who dream. And so he called all the dreamers before him, and they traveled overland in their leather cloaks and their feathered capes, from the most simple, who had hardly anything but a loincloth, to the most august, who wore regalia dripping off of them. They traveled from all the small villages and the larger towns all the way to Tenochtitlan, where Moctezuma held conference with them, asking them, what have you dreamt? What have you dreamt? And in the legend, it's said that the dreamers told Moctezuma that the people from the east, colored like the moon, were going to take everything, that the old world would be lost, and that a turn of the world on its very legs would take place. There would be much bloodshed and suffering, and that Moctezuma would be deposed. Moctezuma tried to reason with the dreamers. No, maybe it's not them. It has to be something different. And can't be that. No, that doesn't seem right. Maybe you misunderstood your dreams. Maybe, but no. Sueñadores, sueñadoras, the dream people, said no. Kindly, they said no. This is how it will be. And Moctezuma, in a rage, some people say, and in the legend it is because he lost his mind and his heart and his soul, and he no longer remembered the great woman, Tonantzin, the creatoress. He no longer remembered, Tezcatlipoca, who is smoking mirror of memory, so that in one part one does not repeat one's mistakes. He forgot all. A spirit that informs. And he ordered the slaughter of the dreamers. And thus, as it is said, he walked amongst their dead bodies, their blood flowing into the ground, weeping for all his beautiful dreamers who were now dead. His loss of connection with the great woman, with the great Tonantzin, also known as Tzilonin, also known by many, many names throughout the entire Aztec Empire, and as well as more names in the Mayan Empire south of there, and even more names in the Incan Empire south of there. His loss of connection, thinking that he could take the lives because he didn't like what he heard, because he didn't want any new world to begin, right, wrong, or indifferent, severed himself from the life-giving and nurturance of the mother. And some say that the legend goes that it was because of the murder of the dreamers that the people, pale like the moon, were able to take over, because the villages no longer had people who could dream the future and bring creative life, new life, rich life, again to the people. And so 500 years passed. And in that 500 years, as you know, there's Our Lady of Guadalupe, who rose up literally out of the dirt of Tepeyac Hill very shortly after the so-called conquest. You're on less than 20 years. All of a sudden, on the hill of Tepeyac, where Tonantzin shrine was, Santo Don Diego sees Our Lady of Guadalupe. And as a result of his sighting of her, where she says to him, "Have you forgotten? I am your mother. You're under my protection. My protection." The great woman is reasserted again. That there's something about this great woman that no matter what you do, no matter how many of her temples, no matter how many of her followers, no matter how many of her dreamers you cut away, I'll have those who see her and love her and bring her back and bring her back. And even if people say, "No, no, there is no such thing," then they all go underground with her and keep her in their hearts alive in that way until such time again, whew, she erupts above ground again. Us too, same way. How many of our talents of giving birth to love, how many of our talents of creative life, how many of our ways of being in the world are cluttered up with all manner of people and things saying, "No, no, 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 you cannot follow this great heart. You cannot expose your breasts and give milk to the things that are of love in this world. Oh, no, no, this cannot possibly be. No, we have to cut off all your dreams and dreamers. No, no, we have to let invasions happen and try to oppress and suppress you. No, we must have this. We must have it our way." How often does that happen? Every day? Yes. Why? Because, as you know, I like to say, because this is planet Earth, not planet perfect. And it is part of being here that we are challenged like this. And so when I drove the Pan American Highway when I was a young woman, I had many reasons for doing so. The deepest one was to meet the people on the road. I felt strongly that the people on the road were an extraordinary group of people. That my sense was that they will remember her, that they will remember the ancient ways that we understood, the great woman, that they would understand, Blessed Mother, Holy Woman, that they would not have had her cut away. They would have instead, as the Blessed Mother, breastfeeding the God of Love in the catacombs, they would have gone underground with her when the conquest came, and they would have kept her alive in their hearts. And that's exactly what I found. Now, I have to remember, the Pan-American Highway, sounds like a four-lane divider. It isn't. In many, many places, it was no more than a path, a dirt path that someone had plowed through, mostly by conscripting Indian tribal people away from their villages and forcing them to work for a consigned amount of time every year on the roadways. And you have never lived until you have seen a person who is a tribal person who still plants with a stick, drive a bulldozer. I was driving a red Jeep, and they went left and I went left. They went right, I went right. We're in a rainstorm coming toward each other on a very narrow road with a ravine drop off on one side. They went left, we went right, they went left, we went right, and crash, bang, right into each other. When I got out to inspect what kind of damage might have been done, not to the bulldozer. The bulldozer is invulnerable in terms of a Jeep. The really little guy, I mean, he was really probably 4 feet tall in his trajes típicas, you know, his striped pajamas. This was in Guatemala. His climb off the bulldozer and said in perfect Spanish and English both, "Our cars are trying to dance with each other." And so, the Pan-American Highway is not a highway. That's too high a word. It's a roadway. And in some places, it's a pathway. And so I had already driven so far down into the interior. I started in Denver, drove down through Nogales, went across to the West Coast, circled over through the middle of Mexico, and then I went down to the south to the Lacandon tribes, and then I went farther south into the Mayan groups, the Quiche and the Cachiquel and the Mam people, and just kept going through El Salvador, Nicaragua, Honduras, Costa Rica, Panama, and then floated my car across to South America and went hither and yon all the way to the tip of Tierra del Fuego. And I was 23 years old, and I had a gun in the door of the car that if I were to have to use it, I would have to unscrew the side liner of the door in order to take it out. But as you know, when you're young and you think that you're on a mission from Our Lady to go speak to people and to find the truth of all things, then sometimes your heart is ahead of your head a little bit. So the Americas are filled with morenos and criollos and mestizos and ladinos, which are different than Latinos. Ladinos are people of Spanish blood, often of the merchant class. It's filled with Africans and Tolucans and Tlaxcalans and Lacandons and Santo Domingos de los Colorados and Italians and Portuguese and Greeks and Germans and Poles and Austrians and Chinese and Japanese and French and United Statesians and all the other tribes, Cuna, every tribe you could imagine, the Americas are filled with. It's such an amazing group of people. Most people think, Mexico's just Mexico. No. It has many, 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 many layers of immigration from Europe and Asia, both. So on this mother road, I will meet all kinds of people. And I would say eventually, do you know Our Lady? Do you know about Our Lady? And they often will smile, the broadest smiles, like straight from their heart. And they will often say either yes, or you mean the one who's the mother of the little infant Jesus? Or Jesus, I'm saying, yes, that one. And almost everyone had a story to tell, but I want to tell you this about the road, that she's called according to how the people use their hands and their spirit. So these are some of the names I learned for Holy Mother when I was on the road that are just beautiful names. Listen to this. If you translate them from the various languages, they are Mother Copal of Sweetest Scent. Madhukopal is a form of incense that is like a tree sap that you have to scrape off certain trees. And, the smell of it is so beautiful. I'm allergic to many of the incenses that one would buy at a store. This one I could eat, I could roll in, I could sleep in. It is such a magnificent, sweet smell that actually, I think, makes a lot of people feel healthier. So, mother of the sweet copal scent. Whew, wow. And then mother glowing ember. This comes from the blacksmiths, the people who are the wrought iron makers. They hammer and forge in tongs, great big barrels of water, great big fires in their little sheds to make wrought iron. There's a mother first sunlight, which comes from this one little village. It's on the edge of a mesa where the first ray of sunlight over the mountain range across the valley hits straight into the plaza of their center, and they call their little Virgin, they have their mother first sunlight. And a mother who turns the drum of the universe, mother who turns the drum, Yatum, the drum of the universe, is by the people who play the flutes and the drums ceremonially. This is what they call the mother. And the mother, a pink mother gate, comes from a place where the wood carvers take from the groundwood of trees that when you peel back the bark, the first layer is pink. And they call her pink mother gate, that the spirit of the wood is beyond that pinkness of the gate. What is the santitos and the santos, the sacred objects that they carve from the wood, are already inside the wood. The mother stands as the pink mother gate. She's also called precious seed corn mother. The seed corn is more valuable thought than the corn on the cob itself, because it means we'll have another year to sow and plant and have harvest. Without the seed corn, we will not have another harvest. And one of my favorite was because of the wars going on in Guatemala, El Salvador, because of the difficult, horrible wars there, there was La Madre Guerrilla, the mother soldier, the mother guerrilla, guerrilla soldier. Also, she was seen as the one carrying a rifle over her shoulder with her mantle of stars and her long gown flowing and the angels on both sides of her. Also, see, as I drove down this highway, that the people know her by the names that are close to the way they understand life, and that some of the names, the holy names that they have, come straight up out of the dirt. They are not given to the people. The people name her. The names aren't given by on high group of hierarchical people in a religion, for instance. The names of her are given by the people according to how they sense her, see her, feel her, hear her. I saw the lady. I saw her. I'm more important. She sees us. She sees us. So everywhere that holy woman is understood, she's understood as ours. She belongs to us. She's ours. And we belong to her. We belong with each other. This is so strong, this belongingness. No aloofness whatsoever in between the Holy Mother and the human beings. It's all one idea. So along this mother road, people would use the road as an altar, so that depending on which parts of the seasons, you would see farmer women and farmer men all dressed in their lush embroidered clothing, and wearing the white straw hats with the little freckles of sunlight all over their dark faces. And they saw the road as a giant feasting altar. And they would say, this is La Mesa with a capital L. This is La Mesa, not a road, not a camino. La Mesa, this is a table. And they would lay out on the roadbed, things to wash and to dry and to sort their crops. And they lugged and laid down whole fields of corn shocks on the road, long trails of bean vines, and great big fat cojones of chirimoyas were laid out in rows for an eighth of a mile at least. And, you know, and so here I am with my Jeep, right? There's no way to drive the road. How can you drive over people's food? So you will have to go off the road. But sometimes the road was so narrow, there's no place to go off. So what did you have to do? Well, had to get out of your Jeep. And the minute you'll come out of your Jeep, you'll be surrounded by old women, old men, and little young children leading them. And I want to know, who are you? And so you would say what your name is, and you would say what and why you were there. And they would immediately say, oh, you have to come see this, and you have to try that. And here, let me cut this open and take a machete and just open a coconut just like that. Pour the milk. You know, it reminded me of my relatives at the Great Lake, Michigan. They would drink the milk straight out of the coconut by holding the coconut high in the air and pouring it straight down into the mouth, and afterwards they go, ah, some things never change amongst our people, do they? And so I'll have some of chirimoya, some of this, some of this roasted corn, some of whatever it was that they were eating, you would eat, and I will give you samples. And it was so, oh, so beautiful. And eventually, you know, I would say that this is given to us by the mother. The mother road is given to us by the mother. She made this come through here. At first, we weren't so happy because they knocked down trees and they made us work for the road commission. But we can, now we can see us. It's a huge ofrenda. It's a huge altar. And we can use it to bring the bounty that we've been given by all that is holy. This is so interesting because here it is. Moctezuma could destroy the image of everything. He could destroy the dreamers. The people who came in conquest could destroy everything else. They could destroy all the temples, which they did. They could destroy all the statues, which they did. They could destroy everything. But even the pieces and parts of the statues that lie in the ground, in the fields of corn, may still be found. Though they've been plowed and plowed those fields and planted year after year with corn, as I walk through those fields, I am walking literally on the ground of the mother. And if you lean down and pick up what you are walking on, the sand and the dirt and the red pottery, you will see painted on those shards of pottery images of the mother on her child. Oh, see, Tonantzin. You see Kuetlike, Lady Serpent Skirt. You'll see all of the hierarchy that is all understood as parts of one. And you will see at the head Tonantzin, the Great Mother. So this blessing road was, people, old women would be having great big vats, zinc tub vats of dye at the side of the road, and there will be dying white cotton. So they would lay out yards and yards across the road of newly purple dyed cloth, newly sienna colored dyed cloth, of newly yellow, beautiful yellow dyed cloth. And this is all drying on the roadway, looking like from afar, colorful ribbons that you can't quite make out until you finally get there. And then you say, well, you, there's no way to drive over this. You can't possibly drive over people's handiwork. So you have to get out of your truck. Well, you get out of your truck and suddenly you're surrounded by the little groups of old people and the little children. And they want to know why you're there. And when you finally say, you know, I wondered if you know the mother. And I say, she's the one who colors. She's the one who makes these colors. She's the one we pray for her to come into. These vats that color the cloth, to touch it with just her fingertip, to turn these into these beautiful colors that we would make our clothes for, but also we make our clothes for. And then they would take me to the little iglesita, the little church that they will have. Her all dressed up underneath these voluminous dresses that La Virgen would be wearing on the altar. They have spangles on them and lace on them and all kinds of embroidery on them. Underneath would be this skinny little muñeca, this skinny little mannequin, you know, maybe 3 feet tall or maybe 6 feet tall even, but skinny. But the clothes that were on would be like 5 feet wide and just voluminous and a little bit like, you know, like how we used to dress when we were little. We were just little children. We had all these big clothes on. We'd go out in the wintertime. Something like that. But they will be so happy and so proud that they will make all these things by hand for their mother. I had such love for her that she should never be cold. She should never be too hot. She should always have food. She should always have shoes. And I will make all these things for her so that she would never be lonely. So in that sense, though the road was hard labor, it was also handmade by the people all the way through the Americas, if you can imagine that. Handmade.
Some people say it's what we deserve for sins against God. Crimes in the world. I wouldn't know. I'm just holding the fort. Since that day they wounded New York. Slaves and our gold. I wouldn't know. I'm just holding the fort. But answer me this, I won't take you to court. Did you go crazy or did you report on that day?
Call sinister fear block for Lummy Remy, loss is easy new wealth for your physician's help, minimals and my wealth, but it's help with lucid all the circle of your Emily.
Albino bread in greased roof, fluorescent winding sheets lying on four mica slabs in a cold sweat, like slices of lard sprayed with phenol.
30 Velocity Child, and every Friday at the stroke of midnight, ride the broomstick with Fallen Woman, a weekly psychic fusion of forward thoughts, far out ideas, magical foray, and spellbinding song, stirring up the cauldron at Radio Free Brooklyn.